So, Senator Chris Murphy, we love having you with us. We are big fans. I want to ask you to start, assuming for a moment, because we've discussed the alternative, assuming for a moment that Hillary Clinton wins this election, a lot of talk about how to bring her into a sort of more progressive pose than a lot of people have thought she was in up to now. How do you get that done?
Well, first, you acknowledge that she's run the most progressive campaign of any major party presidential candidate in recent memory. I mean, you know, I think, you know, people, you know, compare her campaign to that of Bernie Sanders because the rhetoric was different. But when you actually compare the policies, right, Hillary Clinton is bringing to the table some very progressive policies. A lot of people said her plan to rein in Wall Street was much tougher than the plan that Bernie Sanders put on the table. She, working with Bernie Sanders after the primary was done, has introduced a really radical and important plan to make college debt free. She's talking about, you know, major changes to the way in which we confront big crises like mental health or opioid addiction. So, you know, listen, wherever she goes, she's talking about wages, right? She's for a major increase in the minimum wage. She's adopted some of the things that I've proposed, like banning, you know, low-income employers from having non-compete agreements, something Al Franken and I have been leading on. So, you know, I'm really looking forward to, you know, her administration. And I think as long as she's focused on wages, as long as she's focused on continuing to redistribute power from folks that have to folks that have not, I think everybody will be, I think progressives will be happy. And I think most important, you know, workers in this country are going to be happy with her administration.
Who's your best friend in the Senate?
it's like picking amongst your children. So, you know, how would I do that? I have, you know, it's lucky. I have some very good friends in the Senate. Cory Booker, Martin Heinrich, Brian Schatz, Kirsten Gillibrand. You know, there's sort of a younger group of senators. Many of us have young kids that we've become very, very close. We actually spend a decent amount of time together outside of, you know, work with our families. And, you know, it's nice. The Senate has become a place that has a lot more young parents. And I think we bring a sensibility to some of these issues that's unique. They've also become pretty good friends.
Do you play basketball in the morning in the court there, or do you forego that?
My pretty sort of simple life revolves, you know, around this job and my kids and my family. And so I'm, you know, either doing the duty of this job, either in Washington or in Connecticut, or I'm, you know, at home tending to, you know, to be the parent of an 8-year-old and a 4-year-old.
And what do you eat?
My staff is constantly on me about my pretty miserable nutritional habits. So I've got a caffeine addiction, which comes in the form of soda, not coffee. And, you know, given the fact that I'm on the road all the time, I'm eating, you know, sort of fast food or sort of semi-fast food way too often. So I do try to exercise, Alan. I mean, I say I don't play, you know, basketball, but I do try to get out and run late at night after the kids are in bed. So I'm trying to, you know, preserve myself as best I can. But this job is hard. This job is sort of hard to live and eat right, especially when you're doing it, you know, as well as being a parent and a full-time dad.
I can't imagine how hard that job is. You know, even being the head of a couple of radio stations, you know, people want things from you, and they must line up, and you've got to talk to them, right? I mean, they're going to ask you for things, and to, as much as you can, you try to help them, right? How does it work?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I've said from the beginning that, you know, this job of being a senator is, you know, it's temporary, and being a father is permanent, right? And being a husband is permanent, and so that's my priority. And but I do try to find ways to show to folks how much I care about this job. As you know, I walked across the state of Connecticut this summer. I took 6 days, and I walked 130 miles across the state to try to meet people that I would, you know, otherwise not have the chance to meet. So I do try to find new and innovative ways to stay connected to the people that I, you know, represent. And I also have great staff. I mean, I obviously can't, you know, talk to everybody who has a problem with the federal government. I can't answer every single letter, thousands of them that come into the office personally, but I have a great team. You know, I hire really good, committed people, and they help me.
And when you walked, did your staff walk with you, or did you you have to, how did you do that? You had to be
dangerous. Not just me, right? I mean, you know, technology makes it pretty easy now. You can't get too far off track if you've got your smartphone guiding you. But no, I was just me in a, you know, in a backpack, and I just, I'd have staff, you know, sort of, if I was doing events along the way, stopping at a business, they would kind of meet me there. But no, it was just me. And I'll tell you, that prompted the discussions to be much more real. I mean, when you have your United States Senator walk up to you in shorts and a t-shirt and a backpack with no staff, I mean, you will sort of tell them things that you might not otherwise tell them. So I, you know, I feel like I got more really authentic feedback during that, you know, week than, you know, I probably have during any other one individual week back in the state, which means I'm going to, you know, repeat that exercise, you know, hopefully every year that I get the chance to do this job.
Was there one story that happened on your walk that you could tell us about?
Yeah, I'll give you one. I was a lot of times I'd stop at gas stations and I just sort of talk to people who were filling up their tank. And I was talking to a guy who was inside in Clinton, Connecticut. And Clinton's a pretty affluent town. And this guy was working 50 hours a week. He was a roofer and he was getting as much work as he could get in. But he was still making decisions every month whether he was going to pay his rent or put food on the table for his kids, in part because he was making no more money than he did when he was 15 years old. He was still barely making above minimum wage. And life had thrown him a couple curveballs. In particular, he had a kid who was blind, who needed a lot of services. And a lot of that money came out of his own pocket. And so this guy who's doing everything we ask, who's working full-time plus, who's building houses and homes for people, still is on food stamps, still can't fill his kids' lunch boxes. And I tell you, I heard some version of that story over and over and over again on that walk. And ever since, the working poor, the phenomenon of people who are doing everything we ask and still not able to make ends meet, it's a crisis in this state, especially a higher cost state like Connecticut. And I came back from that walk more, you know, more focused than I was before, to be honest. I'd always been focused on this issue, but more focused in a personal way on how to make things better for people like that.
Speaking of which, and I only have 2 minutes to do this with you, and I apologize, and that is gun reform. Is there any hope?
Yeah, of course there's hope. You know, I'm seeing voters rise up in a way that they didn't 2 years ago or 4 years ago, and I think that there's going to be some senators who lose their seats because they voted against the background checks bill, and I've seen the power of these organizations, Mom Demand Action and Gabby Gifford's group. When I travel a country, I'm walking into CAM headquarters, and there's, you know, six people coming up to me with their, you know, anti-gun violence T-shirts saying that they came down to the headquarters to work on this issue and this issue alone. And there's a movement happening out there. And, you know, you just got to understand that the gun groups had 20 years to build up their power between 1994 and Sandy Hook. We've only had 3.5. So I don't think you can expect us to win these fights overnight. But I think there's going to be a big change after this election where Republicans start to realize they better get right on this issue or they're going to start to lose more and more elections.
So it's so interesting because we saw gay marriage, for example, equality in marriage, and nobody expected that in their lifetimes they were going to see it, and all of a sudden, whoosh, it happened. You think that kind of thing could happen in gun control?
It's a different issue, and that gay marriage really was a 50-50 issue before it was a 70-30 issue, right? It really was a matter of persuading people. And you know, kids did that, right? They persuaded their parents,
yes.
Right? This is a different issue because everybody's minds are made up on this one. 90% of Americans want universal background checks. This is a question of activism and getting Congress to sort of get to where the American public is. On gay marriage, that was something that when I started out was, you know, probably less than a 50-50 proposition, which very quickly transformed, you know, in front of people's eyes. So a little bit different issue, maybe easier on gun violence because it's not about changing minds. It's just about, you know, committing Congress to action.
We always love talking to Senator Chris Murphy of Connecticut, who's taken some time out in this busy presidential year to talk to us. And Chris, thank you so much. Always love it when you're with us.
Thank you. Always great to be with you, Alan.